This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Today we conclude our series of programs called Why Should I Vote for You? With a discussion of Homeland Security. The format is the same as our previous show in the series. We're going to hear from the Kerry and Bush campaign representatives one at a time. And because we want to hear from both Bush and Kerry supporters, we've set up separate phone lines this hour. If you're a Bush supporter, the number to call is 800-344-3893. If you're a Kerry supporter, the number is 800-344-3864. Again, those numbers are 800-344-3893 for Bush supporters, and for Kerry supporters, 800-344-3864. You can pose your question to either representative. The email address is same as always, totn@npr.org. We're asking both sides to keep their responses to a minute so we can get to as many of your calls as possible. At my discretion, we'll allow you to ask a brief follow-up question, or I may ask a follow-up myself. Each representative will also have 2 minutes to sum up at the end of their portion of the show. Let's get started. Since we started with the Kerry representative last Thursday, today we begin with the representative of the Bush campaign, and joining us now is Richard Falkenrath, formerly the president's deputy Homeland Security advisor, now a visiting fellow at the Brookings Institution. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil.
And let's begin with our first caller. Dave Ekman is a professional firefighter and joins us by phone from his firehouse in York, Pennsylvania. Mr. Ekman.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Go ahead, please.
Thank you for taking my call. I would like to ask you this, Mr. Falkenrath. In Pennsylvania, cities are closing fire stations and reducing the number of people on duty at any particular time. Our training and equipment is not what it should be to meet the expectations of the public. What exactly would a Bush administration do in a second term that would make sure that first responders have the necessary equipment, training, and resources to be able to adequately respond to these new types of events that we are expected to respond to?
Well, Dave, thank you for that question. The Bush administration has been working on this issue, I think, more intensively than any other administration in U.S. history. Since 9/11, we've increased the amount of money that goes to state and local first responders and the firefighters in particular by over 1,000%. And now the budgets are on the order of $3.5 billion. They sometimes a little bit more, sometimes a little bit less. And that's distributed through the states. There is no way that the federal government can have a coherent relationship with all of the individual departments and agencies out there. So we have to work with the governor's offices to figure out how the money should be best spent in each state, recognizing that there's no one-size-fits-all answer and that each city and county and state are going to be a little bit different. So there's large block grants going to the states, and we rely heavily on the states to develop plans to figure out how best to spend that money within their own jurisdiction. Firefighters have gotten more money in this administration than they have in any other administration in U.S. history, and it is focused on giving them the training and equipment they need to deal with mass casualty and terrorist events. And I think that will continue. I'm pretty sure that regardless of who wins, I feel like this is now an ingrained part of the U.S. government, and President Bush is committed to it, and to building the capacity of our state and local first responders to respond to a domestic event. In addition, I'll say that we've also worked on the procedures for domestic response, and in particular have promoted the nationwide adoption of an incident command system based on a firefighter model, which will now be part of the National Emergency Management System that President Bush has pressed for and that Tom Ridge and the rest of the Department of Homeland Security have been trying to adopt with extensive involvement from the firefighter community.
Dave Ekman, is that an answer for you?
Well, it is, but I think I might take exception for the fact that didn't the president X out the budget and under the money for first responders and under the pressure of Congress then have it put back in?
No, I don't think that's right. I think the president's first budget after 9/11 set aside $3.5 billion for first responders. And there are a number of other legacy programs, the COPS program, the fire grant program, which are continuing. But the president's original budget foresaw a consolidation of these smaller programs into the much larger first responder program, which has continued. In some cases, Congress has added some money to it. In other cases, they've taken away money from, in particular, the high urban threat grant stream. So there's a lot of different grant streams underway. There are some puts and takes from the different portions of the federal budget, but overall we've seen a marked increase above what any other president has ever done for state and local public safety agencies.
Dave, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. And let me follow up with an email question. This from Tahara Probst in Ridgefield, Washington. Can you please explain why states like Wyoming and Alaska receive far higher per capita rates of Homeland Security funding, while states like California and New York, which was, after all, targeted on 9/11, receive less than half that rate per capita?
The reason has to do with how the legislation is written by the Congress. And the Congress has had a formula since before 9/11, in fact, for how to allocate the money. And it's a formula that has a floor for every state. So 40% of the money historically has been just divided up by the 50 states straight. So each one gets 1/50th of the 40% of the total. And that means that those states with a very small population have a per capita much higher percentage of it. And it has the outcome that your question describes.
Well, the 9/11 Commission, among others, have said this allocation is misguided. We ought to put the money where the greatest threat is.
As has the president. The president's budget has called for a marked increase in what we call the high urban threat area grant stream. And that is money that would be allocated according to the highest threat areas, which tend to be the large cities. The amount of money that has gone towards high urban threat grants has been reduced by the Congress, which have many members and chairmen of the key committees are from small states, and they want the money to keep going to the small states. So this is a debate. This is why we have a political and budget process. The president's position is much closer to the 9/11 Commission, and in fact, he held that well before the 9/11 Commission report came out.
Again, our number is different today because of the format of our program. We're talking with representatives of the Bush and Kerry campaigns on the issue of Homeland Security. The question, why should I vote for you? Republicans, 800-344-3893. Democrats, 800-344-3864. Our guest is Richard Falkenrath. He's President Bush's former Homeland Security advisor and now a visiting fellow at the Brookings Institution. And let's get another question from a listener. And this is Diane. Diane's calling from Boston, Massachusetts.
Hi. Mr. Falkenrath, a big question for you with regard to inspection of airplane cargo and container ships. It's a particular concern to me with the busy harbor here in Boston. Why has there been no change from 5% of the inspection of cargo, of the cargo coming into our country, when it's such a fertile ground for terrorists to bring in, but not only themselves, but equipment?
Well, thank you, Diane, for that good question. It is a key vulnerability, and I'm just going to take issue with your facts a little bit. The numbers, there has been extensive change in how we handle the cargo shipments into the United States, and 5% is not an accurate figure. There's different sorts of inspections that occur for different cargoes. Some containers are ripped apart, and every bit of cargo within them are hauled out and looked at individually. Some are scanned with an X-ray machine at the point of entry. Some are scanned by dogs or by trained customs officers. Some have radiation pagers scanned over them to see if there's radiation there. All of them have their manifest analyzed by customs inspectors who are doing manifest analysis before the cargo even arrives in the ports. Some are looked at abroad at our cargo container security cities abroad, like Rotterdam and Antwerp, where we actually have U.S. officials since 9/11 deployed to inspect the cargo before it's even shipped. The key point I want to leave you with, though, is that just increasing the percentage of cargoes we physically inspect is not the centerpiece of our strategy. The centerpiece of our strategy is to get smarter about how we carry out the inspections, recognizing that it is impossible to physically inspect, to tear apart every single container that comes into this country. And in fact, it would be unwise, since the vast majority of them present no threat whatsoever. Our strategy emphasizes the use of intelligence and information systems to analyze the cargo shipments coming into this country before they even arrive here so that we can make more intelligent inspection decisions, not just more inspections. And so that's the centerpiece of the strategy. It looks at what we call, it tries to be a smart border, not just a border where there's more containers being ripped apart, a border where we use information gathered in advance, analyzed with the best computer systems we can acquire to make really smart inspection decisions.
I apologize to Diane, on whom I hung up by mistake. And Mr. Falkenrath, just a reminder to keep your answers a little shorter, if you could, because we want to get to more questions. Could you come up with a percentage of the number of cargoes in containers that are inspected?
I can't give you one percentage because it varies greatly given what sort of inspection you're talking about. The percentage that are physically torn apart, where they take the cargo container, pull it aside, and rip everything out and go through it, is quite small. And that's a very time-consuming and intrusive inspection measure. As I said, there are other types of inspections that go on, bomb or drug-sniffing dogs, the analysis of the manifest, scanning with radiation pagers, scanning in foreign ports before the cargo is even shipped. And the answer varies for every one of those. And obviously, it varies from port to port. High drug ports, where there's a lot of drug shipments, have much higher percentages of dog inspections with drug-sniffing dogs than do ports that don't have a drug problem to the same degree.
Okay. Diane was calling on the Republican line. Let's go to the Democratic line. This is Sally calling from Baltimore.
Hi. The first part of my question was already answered regarding the cut to first responders. But the second part of my question, I shoot for sport. And I am appalled that President Bush did not push farther to get the assault ban, the assault weapons ban, continued. How can he consider himself, you know, to be strong on Homeland Security when he's not doing everything that he can to get assault weapons, which have no sport use whatsoever, off of the street?
Well, Sally, my understanding is that President Bush actually did call for the continuation of the assault weapon ban, and it was Congress that did not act in time to continue it before the previous ban has expired. But his position was that he was for the continuation of the ban. He doesn't get to decide what Congress passes. He has to work with Congress on many different issues, and they work their will in complicated ways at times. And this is a case where he didn't get what he wanted. And that happens more often. That happens more than many people realize for the president, even when his own party is in charge of both chambers.
With respect to follow up on Sally's question, the president did say that if this measure came to his desk, he would sign it. He's been criticized for not lobbying Congress more heavily to pass that legislation.
I've heard that criticism. But ultimately, I think if voters have a problem with this, they need to look at their congressman and the position they've taken on it. He's took a position on the matter. It was Congress's job to extend the ban, and they failed to do it. He represents only one branch of government, the branch that signs bills once they're passed. The actual passage of the bill is the Congress's responsibility.
Sally, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And let's go now to, it's on the Republican line. Charles describes himself as undecided. He's calling from Kingston, New Hampshire.
Yes. I'm an independent voter in the swing state of New Hampshire, and the last time I voted, I took a Republican ballot when I went into the primaries. My question is this. The last time around, I'm interested in prior to 9/11, not since 9/11, but prior to 9/11, the ball was obviously dropped as regards issues surrounding intelligence leading up to the attacks that hit us in New York and at the Pentagon. I'd like to know what is going to be changed in the upcoming administration regarding intelligence so that we will not be attacked a second time, having been dropped by what I think was, let's face it, this administration was in power.
Charles, I'm going to have to ask you to stay on the line. We have to take a short break now. We'll get an answer from Richard Falkenrath after we come back on the other side of the break on this question about intelligence, a key one that's been debated ever since the attacks on 9/11. We welcome you to join our conversation. Remember, our phone lines are set up differently today. If you're a Republican supporter, 800-344-3893. For Democrats, 800-344-3864. TOTN at npr.org for all of our emailers. Back after a short break, I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We continue with Richard Falkenrath, an advisor to the Bush-Cheney campaign. He's answering Homeland Security questions for our series, Why Should I Vote for You? A little bit later in the program, a representative of the Kerry campaign will join us. Don't forget, the phone lines have changed for this hour. Bush supporters, 800-344-3893. Kerry supporters, 800-344-3864. You can direct your question to either candidate. Our email address is unchanged, TOTN@npr.org. Charles is on the line. He called from Kingston, New Hampshire, just before the break. He posed a question about intelligence and pointed out that, after all, 9/11 did happen on the president's watch. And Richard Falkenrath.
Indeed, it did happen. And Charles asked an excellent question that I'm going to have a hard time answering in less than a minute. Because preventing another terrorist attack is by far the highest priority of President Bush, and has been since 9/11, and it continues to this day. The changes that have occurred in the U.S. government are extensive, and I'd break them down into three categories: the collection of intelligence, its analysis, and the sharing of intelligence across different agencies. There are enormous changes and reforms underway in all three aspects of the problem. For collection, we have vastly increased our covert collection abroad through the CIA. It's not a subject that can be talked about that openly, but our spies and the intelligence community are working far harder than they were on counterterrorism collection abroad than they were pre-9/11 today. That at home, the collection is run by our chief law enforcement agency, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, who has dramatically increased its domestic counterterrorism activity and works very closely with other federal agencies and state and local agencies through a network of joint terrorism task forces in every city. The ability to share information between domestic law enforcement and foreign intelligence is dramatically improved today. The wall that previously existed between these two communities has been torn down by the Patriot Act, the passage of the Patriot Act. And that allows us to do an integrated analysis of a transnational terrorist threat that combines foreign intelligence and domestic law enforcement information so that we can get one complete picture of the terrorist threat to the country. The president gets briefed on that every single morning when he's briefed by the director of the FBI and the director of the CIA. And so there have been huge changes in this area. The two key things that are before us still to do are, first, the extension of the Patriot Act, and second, the reform of the intelligence community contemplated by the 9/11 Commission report. And I think I really want to emphasize here is the importance of the extension of the Patriot Act to this issue. Charles asked about preventing another terrorist attack. That is fundamentally an issue of making sure that our agencies can collect the information they need against the threats to our country and then share it across agency lines. And if the Patriot Act is not extended again in 2005, when 16 of its provisions will expire, there will be a loss in our ability to do that. President Bush is for the complete extension of the Patriot Act. John Kerry, even though he voted it, is not.
Charles?
The Patriot Act has a lot of things involved in it that, as an independent voter, many of us are worried about, that have to do with personal liberties here at home. And so that's not obviously not the entire answer. My question was regarding the increases in help in intelligence. I detect a dramatic lack of specificity in his answer, and a lot of references to, quote, dramatic improvements. But I'd be interested to find out what specifics might be done from either of these candidates. Thank you.
And Charles, thank you for the phone call. Could I just ask, the reform, the intelligence reform proposals are now bottled up in a congressional conciliation committee. There's a Senate bill and a House bill. There's little chance at this point, or it's given little chance, to get a bill out and to be signed before Election Day. And many proponents, including the chairman of the 9/11 Commission, worry that this is going to be a dead measure in a lame duck session of Congress. Is the president intervening to get an intelligence reform measure passed before Election Day?
He is, and he is. He has called the Speaker of the House on this matter. He said, "I want a bill on my desk before you leave." He's written them in great detail, analyzing the two bills and the provisions which he favors between them. He's made clear that he has preferences between the two bills, the House bill and the Senate bill, and he's working closely with the House to get the bill done. It is a matter of the Congress and the Congress's conference committee that has to reconcile two quite different drafts to sort out and to pass a single version, which can then come to his desk. I've read in the papers that members of Congress believe it's a long shot to get it done before November 2nd, but there will still be time in the 108th Congress to get it done before they adjourn.
Here's an email question. This is from Kirk D. Van Dorn in Monoman, Minnesota. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I continually hear President Bush state the United States and the rest of the world are much safer and better off now that Saddam Hussein has been removed. I would agree that this is true for the most part for the rest of the world. As a U.S. citizen, however, I feel far less safe than I did prior to the invasion of a country which had no direct connection to 9/11. We're now hated by far more of the world than before and have become a rallying cry, recruitment incentive, and the target of all Islamic extremists and terrorists alike. How are we now safer?
Well, I'd offer Kirk a slightly different perspective. First, I'd say we're not the target of all Islamic extremism. We are one of many targets, but they are also targeting Israel. They're targeting Iraqis. They're targeting Europeans. They're targeting Pakistanis, Indonesians. Lots of different people are the targets of Islamic extremism. But on the matter of Iraq and how it's made it safer, the different perspective I'd like to leave with Kirk is to think about Abu Musab Zarqawi. This is one of the most vicious terrorists still operational today. He was not part of al-Qaeda prior to 9/11, though he's maybe sworn allegiance to them since. He was in Afghanistan prior to our invasion of Afghanistan, the elimination of the terrorist sanctuary there. He was going to become a global operative no matter what. And he had decided to go to Iraq and to fight U.S. forces and our coalition partners and the Iraqi people and the Iraqi government in Iraq. But if he hadn't gone to Iraq, he would have gone somewhere else. And he might have come here, he might have gone to Europe, he might have gone to Asia. But because he's in Iraq, we now know where he is and we can fight him there, and I'm confident at some point we will defeat him. He's not the only such terrorist. He may well be the most vicious and effective at this moment, but this is where he is now, in Iraq, and it's better to fight him there than here.
Let's see if we can squeeze in one more call. Paul is with us from Boulder, Colorado. Could you keep it short, please, Paul?
Yeah, I'm an attorney, and I'm very concerned about the civil rights that we've given up under the Patriot Act, and I'd like this gentleman to point to at least one terrorist who has been successfully arrested and prosecuted under the Patriot Act.
And if you could keep your answer short so we can give you the 2 minutes to wrap up at the end.
Well, the Patriot Act is, as if you're an attorney, you'll know, the Patriot Act is not the only law that is used. What the Patriot Act was a slight augmentation of many different legal authorities that our law enforcement officers use. So you can't actually say a person convicted under the Patriot Act, because the Patriot Act is just it's a series of very technical changes across the U.S. code and the criminal code. So there have been many terrorists arrested under different provisions that were amended by the Patriot Act, but the provisions predated the Patriot Act. So the question is sort of difficult. You say you're concerned about civil rights. And I think it's appropriate to reverse this question and put it on the civil rights advocates who keep claiming there's been some violation because of the Patriot Act. I'm unaware of any single case of a civil liberties violation as a result of the federal officers' exercise of their new powers under the Patriot Act. No case has come forward from anybody. And there's a lot of misinformation about this, a lot of other things going on in the world which people say are about the Patriot Act, but in fact are not.
Paul,
the key thing about the Patriot Act.
May I just answer real quick?
Paul, I'm afraid you can't, because we've got to move on to give the Kerry campaign equal time. But we thank you for your phone call. I apologize for squeezing you in there at the end. And Richard Falkenrath, the issue: why should I vote for you? The issue is Homeland Security. 2 minutes.
Well, thank you, Noel, for the time, and thank you to all the listeners for tuning in. There's been the 9/11 changed everything in America, and it changed the president's approach to his job dramatically. Since 9/11, he has made the prevention of another terrorist attack the highest priority of his presidency. He works on it every single day. Every morning, he starts his day with a meeting with his senior advisors, looking at the latest intelligence of a threat against us and our interests abroad. And he works very aggressively to achieve his number one objective, which is to prevent another attack. So far, he's been successful. There have been no additional attacks against the United States since 9/11. And every day that goes by that there's not another attack is another day that is a success. But it's important to emphasize that prevention is not the only part of the president's strategy. It is his highest priority, and he's willing to take enormous risks and bear great costs to ensure that he prevents another attack. But he's also committed to protecting our most critical infrastructure, to enhancing our border security, to enhancing our ability to respond to an attack at home by investing in state and local public safety capabilities. And on every aspect of Homeland Security, he's put in place major new programs with a threefold increase in the federal budget for Homeland Security, and is paying major dividends. America is much, much safer today than it was 3 years ago, and it will be safer still under 4 more years of his leadership.
Richard Falkenrath, we thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate
it. Thank you, Noel.
Richard Falkenrath is formerly President Bush's Deputy Homeland Security Advisor, now a visiting fellow at the Brookings Institution. Let's turn now to our representative from the Kerry campaign, Susan Rice, a Senior Advisor for National Security Affairs to the Kerry Edwards campaign, on leave as a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. She joins us from the Kerry campaign headquarters in Washington, D.C., and without inquiring what goes on in the cafeteria at the Brookings Institution during lunchtime, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you.
Good to have you on the program. And let's go right to a phone call. By the way, the number for Republicans to call is 800-344-3893. For Democrats, 800-344-3864. And let's go to Kelly. Kelly's calling from Montclair, New Jersey.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question was originally for the Bush-Cheney campaign. Can I raise it anyway?
Absolutely. You can go right ahead.
Okay, I'm just kind of baffled as to how the Bush-Cheney campaign, they reason that they can win a war on terrorism. I want to know how they can reason this given the rise of anti-Americanism all across the world since the war in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan.
Kelly, I'm sorry, I misunderstood you. I thought you were calling in favor of the Bush-Cheney campaign with a question for the other side, and this is not going to be appropriate a question to the Democratic representative. So I thank you for the phone call. We do have some emails, though, and here's one from Harry Saul in Palo Alto, California. President Bush says he's done an outstanding job in dealing with the events of 9/11 here at home. Please describe the top three things that your candidate would do here at home that your opponent it would not do when the next major act of terrorism happens within our borders.
Well, I think the first important point is that while President Bush has given a great deal of lip service to protecting the homeland, the fact is he has not put the resources and the effort behind those words. His tax cut for the richest people in the country, those earning $1.2 million a year or more, is worth $89 billion a year. That's double the entire country's budget for homeland security. And as a consequence, we've got huge vulnerabilities. Our chemical plants remain largely unprotected. We have 100 chemical plants in metropolitan areas with populations of a million or more that could be attacked, and the consequence is devastating. We are not prepared for a bioterror attack. Our medical infrastructure is not ready. We have only 530 licensed vaccines for anthrax. Our aviation security, despite all of the investment in that, is not what it should be. The TSA inspected itself recently and managed to sneak explosives past airport screeners in all 15 airports that they tested. Our rails and subways are not secure, so there are huge vulnerabilities that remain. John Kerry gave a very important speech today in which he outlined in great detail his plan for securing the homeland. He would spend $60 billion in additional funds over the next 10 years to close some of these vulnerabilities, to make our ports secure so that we screen incoming cargo for dirty bombs and other radiological devices, to secure our rail lines, to make sure we are in fact prepared for a bioterror attack, and to force the chemical industry and the nuclear power industry to step in line and take the necessary security precautions to protect their facilities, something that President Bush has shielded them from because of his coddling of special interests.
And just a reminder that we are asking to try to keep the answers to a minute if you can so we can get to more questions, as the same rules for Richard Falkenrath, who was with us earlier from the Bush campaign. We're talking today about why should I vote for you? The issue is Homeland Security, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get a caller in on the Republican line. This is Bob calling from Reno, Nevada.
Hi, Neil.
Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead, Bob.
My question is, you know, you always hear the president say that 9/11 changed everything, almost to the degree that you'd think he wouldn't be running for president if it weren't for 9/11. I was wondering, does the Democratic candidate also feel that 9/11 changed everything, or does he have a different take on that? Especially with regard to the Patriot Act and the need for, our giving up some of our civil liberties, it seems, for protection.
Susan Rice?
Well, 9/11 certainly changed a great deal, and John Kerry has been very plain that we're now at war with Al-Qaeda, which is present in 60 countries around the world, and that we have to have the best trained and equipped and prepared military, the best intelligence assets, and a multifaceted strategy to defeat the terrorists and find and capture and kill them. But it doesn't mean that we have to compromise our freedoms. Yes, John Kerry supported the Patriot Act, but he believes that certain provisions of the Patriot Act, which have proved particularly intrusive, for example, the ability to see what library materials you checked out, ought to be revised. And he supports a continuation of the Patriot Act, but with particular revisions to some of the most egregious provisions in the law so that we don't sacrifice our civil liberties, even as we do our utmost to defeat terrorism.
Bob, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you, Neil.
Here's an email question, this from Nancy Scala in Appleton, Wisconsin. Assuming Congress may remain Republican, how could a President Kerry be more effective on Homeland Security?
Well, Congress understands that they are responsible to the people in their local jurisdictions, and to a very substantial extent, it has been Congress that has put money in the budget for Homeland Security where the President hasn't. For example, the President has not requested a single dime in his previous first three-year budgets for port security here at home. He has not requested a single dime for rail security to enhance the security of our rails and subways. It's been Congress that's put those resources in the budget to the extent that they exist. So Congress understands that it has an obligation to protect its citizens and its various constituencies, and the question is how those resources are allocated. And I think everybody agrees, and certainly John Kerry will make a very strong case, that even as we must have the most aggressive and effective offense against the terrorists abroad, we can't afford to slack on defense. We have to play offense and defense effectively, and that means investing in Homeland Security instead of protecting special interests like the chemical industry, and instead of giving tax breaks to the richest Americans earning $1.2 million a year or more.
But again, how does President Kerry get those measures through a Republican Congress? And I'm going to have to ask you to be brief because we have to go to a break in just a few seconds.
I think the short answer is that the Republican Congress itself has been more supportive of Homeland Security funding than this president has been. So I don't think John Kerry would necessarily be pushing on a closed door.
Thank you. This is Susan Rice, a senior national security advisor to the Kerry campaign. Earlier, we spoke with a representative from the Bush campaign. More questions to Susan Rice when we come back from a short break. Remember, our phone lines are set up differently today. We're asking Bush supporters to call in with questions at 800-344-3893. For Kerry supporters, 800-344-3864. If you'd like to email a question, it's totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Today, we're concluding our series, Why Should I Vote for You? We're talking today about Homeland Security. Our guest is Susan Rice, a representative from the Kerry campaign. Don't forget, our phone lines have changed this hour. If you're a Bush supporter, 800-344-3893. Kerry supporters, 800-344-3864. The email address is totn@npr.org. Here's an email from Kathy Mateer in Baltimore, Maryland. Simple question. What has Senator Kerry or Senator Edwards done in Congress to aid in the protection of this country? Any bills authored that have actually been passed?
John Kerry and John Edwards have been leaders in Congress in terms of protecting our national security. John Kerry has served for 20 years on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He also served on the Intelligence Committee, which John Edwards has as well. And they've led a number of pieces of legislation aimed at increasing our national security. They have both supported the Patriot Act. They have both supported the largest intelligence and military budgets in our nation's history. And they believe that America is stronger when we are working with our allies in the world, when the president levels with the American people, when we have reliable intelligence, and so they will implement all of the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission without equivocation. They will do what is necessary to protect our homeland and take the fight effectively to terrorists abroad.
In terms of the record, though, which was what Kathy Mateer was asking about, in terms of bills written by either senator?
Well, we could spend the rest of the hour, Neil, talking about bills authored by both senators, whether you want to talk about our efforts to open up relationships and normalize them with Vietnam, which was a critical initiative of John Kerry's in the 1990s, to legislation offered to improve our military pay and benefits, to protecting the rights of our veterans. There are innumerable pieces of legislation I could point to.
Email from Ben Kuhner in Portland, Oregon. The Bush campaign has implied that Senator Kerry's desire for diplomatic measures is a weakness with regard to Homeland Security. How do you believe Senator Kerry, or a President Kerry, can use diplomacy to make the United States more secure?
In order for the United States to be more secure, we have to use all of the elements of American power. We can't afford to use just one or two. Obviously, critically important is the power of our military, and that's why John Kerry supports adding 40,000 additional active duty troops to our armed forces. He supports a doubling of our special forces capability so that we have the particular capability we need to hunt and capture and kill terrorists. But John Kerry also thinks that we absolutely have to use our intelligence, the power of our economy, the power of our ideals, and indeed our diplomatic capabilities. We need other nations to cooperate with us to the maximal extent if we're going to find terrorists in remote parts of the world, if we're going to be able to cut off their finances, and if we're going to be able to cooperate to strengthen weak societies where terrorists have found haven and recruits. All of these are costly efforts and complicated efforts which are impossible for the United States to succeed in by itself. We need strong alliances. We need good relationships with other countries around the world. Unfortunately, those relationships have suffered dearly under President Bush, and John Kerry will make it a very top priority to begin the process of repairing and restoring those relationships so that we're more secure.
Bill Stevens writes from Sisters, Oregon. We live in the wildfire-prone areas of Central Oregon. The first direct impact we felt of the administration's homeland security efforts was when wars in the Middle East took away a large percentage of our National Guard troops, who had been a crucial part of our firefighting teams. As you can imagine, we do not feel more secure in our homeland as a result. What would a President Kerry propose to do to bring homeland security home again, where it can do some real good?
Well, that's a great question. You know, homeland security is about the front lines. It's about our firefighters, our police, our first responders. This president has cut funding for our police and cut funding for our firefighters. John Kerry will put 100,000 additional firefighters on the job. He'll restore full funding for the COPS program, which put 100,000 new police officers on the street in the 1990s, which this president has slashed. In order to deal with the problem of the overstretched National Guard and Reserve, which are indeed overseas and not able to perform their duties here at home, he will add 40,000 additional troops to our armed forces. These will be full-time, active-duty troops, not for Iraq, but for the many other responsibilities and challenges we face around the world. And in doing so, he'll begin the process of relieving the tremendous burden that's been placed on our Guard and Reserve so that they can have more normal and predictable rotations, live the lives that they were promised by the Commander-in-Chief, and be available to protect our communities and our homeland.
Let's go to a question. This is Pete calling in on the Republican line from Athens, Ohio.
Hello. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
My question is just a real short one. Everything sounds great when you propose it that way, but if you only are going to pay for it by rolling back the tax cut on the wealthy, how are you going to pay for even half of these things that you have discussed?
John Kerry has put forward a very detailed budget proposal that outlines the trade-offs, the cost savings, the revenue increases in the various things. And I think if you take time to look at it, and it's available online, you'll see that it works. That, yes, rolling back the tax cut for the richest 1% of Americans, those that earn over $1.2 million a year, will save $89 billion. We've been talking about, in each year, we've been talking about homeland security. And let me be clear and say that John Kerry is not going to raise taxes on the middle class. In fact, he has a tax cut for the middle class, which we are able to pay for through reductions in government spending and reallocation of priorities. But when it comes to homeland security, as I mentioned earlier, John Kerry has proposed to spend a minimum of an additional $6 billion a year over the next 10 years. That will enable us to take critical steps to secure our ports and rails, to put back on track our biosecurity and bioterror efforts, and to put the cops and the police back on the streets that we need.
And where would that additional $6 billion a year come from?
in part out of the $89 billion that will be saved by rolling back the tax cut on those that earn $1.2 million a year.
I see. Pete, do the numbers add up for you? I think Pete's left us. Thank you very much for the phone call, though.
I urge Pete to take a look at the plan online and compare it to the Bush plan, which the Washington Post estimates will cost about $3 trillion.
Let's go to another call. This on the Democratic line. Carrie's in Oakland, California.
Hi. Yes, I was wondering if President Kerry would allocate Homeland Security dollars differently than Bush, because right now I understand that per capita, Miami is as protected as Boise, Idaho, for example.
Yes.
One of the anomalies in the way that Homeland Security funding has been done, to be quite candid, is that the money has gone disproportionately to those parts of the country where on a per capita basis, I mean, I'm talking about funds allocated on a per capita basis, where arguably the threat is not as great. That's been in part a function of powerful members of Congress who happen to sit on the Appropriations Committee looking out for their home areas, places like Alaska, that where the chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee is from, have done remarkably well compared to places like New York State on a per capita basis. But it's also a fact, I think, if you look at the allocations nationwide, that you will see more of the money flowing to so-called red states than so-called blue states, and that may not always necessarily be the most rational allocation when you match it up against the threat profile.
Carrie, does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much for the call. Here's an email question from Diana Fulner. There seems to be a curious frequency of periodic tidbits apparently designed to stir up uncertainties and fears. I'm referring to the tidbits that speak about information of a possible terrorist attack, but we can't tell you, the public, anything further, or we don't have details, but we think someone has an attack planned before such an event. How would President Kerry do things differently from the way they're being done now?
I think part of the problem with the threat information is that it seems sometimes to people to be curiously timed. But it also seems to come without adequate explanation. I think, frankly, in the last few months, there have been some efforts on the part of the Department of Homeland Security to do better. By that, I mean instead of putting the entire country on orange alert because of a nonspecific threat that doesn't pertain to a particular time or place, they've started to put particular areas of the country, limited areas of the country, on higher alert. But this system of color-coded threats, frankly, I think needs reconsideration. It needs a review, and I think you'll see that in the Kerry administration. It may prove to be the best method that we can possibly do, but clearly we need to tailor our responses and our alerts to the specificity of the intelligence that generates the alert, and be far more judicious in how we apply increased alert status.
That is Susan Rice, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, now a national security advisor to the Kerry campaign. Earlier, a representative from the Bush campaign was with us. We're talking about Why Should I Vote for You on Homeland Security. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get one more caller in. Martin is with us from Newton, Massachusetts.
Hello. Susan, I keep hearing about the thousands, hundreds of thousands of intelligence documents that have not yet been translated, even because of failures of the CIA to have proper intelligence operatives. And it seems to me that neither campaign has addressed the issue of thousands, maybe millions of loyal Islamist Americans who could be very helpful in recruiting instead of being persecuted under the Patriot Act. I wonder if you could address that.
I think you're absolutely right. There is undoubtedly a real need for increased language and regional expertise in our intelligence community, as well as throughout our national security community. And John Kerry has been very plain that he recognizes that need, and he thinks that we need to treat all Americans as loyal citizens, and that we can't racially profile people, and that we can't do what the Bush administration did, which was to turn away linguists with special language skills of the sort that we're talking about, Arabic and other language skills, because of concerns about their sexual orientation, which was the case right after 9/11. We have a national security requirement to enhance our intelligence capability, to enhance our language capability, and we need to go about that in a rational way that treats individuals with respect and doesn't profile them.
Has Senator Kerry spoken out about the need to bring more Arab-speaking Muslim Americans into national security and intelligence?
He, in fact, has. If you look at a speech that he gave rather recently at the end of September, and the accompanying fact sheets that went with that at Temple University, talked about the need to train a new generation of Americans with expertise, language expertise, and regional expertise to be part of a national security cadre, indeed an academic cadre, that can help us understand the world we live in better and be better equipped to manage threats and take advantage of opportunities.
Martin, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
And we have 2 minutes now for you, Susan Rice, to answer the question, the issue, Homeland Security, why should I vote for you?
The reason that the American people should vote for John Kerry for president is because he understands that we have to do two things simultaneously if we're going to make America safer. We have to be far more effective in fighting the war against al-Qaeda abroad. Al-Qaeda is now in 60 countries around the world, and we are focused almost exclusively on a fight in Iraq, which has now become what it wasn't before, which is a haven for terrorists. John Kerry has a plan to win the peace in Iraq and fight the war far more effectively abroad on terrorism. At the same time, however, we have to be serious about Homeland Security. In the debate, President Bush said that we can't afford to protect our homeland adequately. And he said most recently that it's up in the air whether or not America can be safe. John Kerry's view is we cannot afford to fail to invest adequately in homeland security, even as we take all the steps necessary to fight most effectively abroad. John Kerry outlined today in a speech in Green Bay, Wisconsin, in very specific terms, the steps that he would take to strengthen homeland security, to make our ports and rails more secure, to strengthen our biodefense capabilities, to strengthen our aviation security so that we begin to screen cargo in our holds as well as baggage, so that we protect our nuclear and chemical plants rather than allow special interest concerns to leave them undefended. We have a huge set of tasks before us on homeland security. John Kerry will make those a priority. He will invest an additional $60 billion over 10 years in homeland security and get the job done so the American people are safer.
Susan Rice, we thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Susan Rice, a senior national security advisor to the Kerry campaign, joined us from the Kerry campaign headquarters here in Washington, D.C. Earlier, we spoke with Richard Falkenrath, President Bush's former deputy homeland security advisor, now a visiting fellow at the Brookings Institution. The question, of course, why should I vote for you on homeland security? I'm Neil Conan, NPR News in Washington.